This is the Tom Hartman on the program.
No, I got it now. Sure, we're good. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us is Alan Lichtman. He is the author of a new book, The Case for Impeachment. He's also a distinguished professor of history at American University. Alan Lichtman, L-I-C-H-T-M-A-N, is his Twitter handle. And Alan, welcome back to the Professor Lichtman, welcome to the program. And thank you for writing this book. First of all, before we actually get into, you know, what's in your book, I'm wondering, this book came out before the Mueller report did, is there anything that you would add to it now, given what you know from what you've learned from Robert Mueller's investigation?
The book actually came out even before Robert Mueller was appointed as independent special counsel. Mm-hmm. Sure, there are some things I would add based on what I now know a long time before the book came out. Even the revised paperback edition came out long before the Mueller report. But I have to say this, that while the Mueller report adds detail and verisimilitude to the story, basically it is not much different than what I laid out in my book, where I had a chapter on the Russia connection, talked about the Trump Tower meeting, have a chapter on Trump flouting the law throughout his life and career, someone who had no concern whatsoever for the law or rules. I have a chapter on Trump lies. Of course, at that time, when I published the book, certain details were not yet known, and certain actions had not yet taken place, or at least were not known to me, such as Trump's efforts to fire the special counsel through the White House counsel McGahn, McGahn's refusal, Trump's then telling him to lie. And in particular, of course, I didn't know anything yet about the hush money payments to the porn star and the Playboy model, and certainly nothing yet about the fact that Trump had, in criminal violation of the campaign finance laws, directed Michael Cohen to make the payments and then tried to keep them secret and not report them on his Federal Election Commission reports. That's not a technical violation. The campaign finance laws are designed precisely to avoid the corruption of our democracy, and that's what Trump was doing. But I have to say, the basics of how Donald Trump operates, his connections with the Russians, his disregard for the law, his disregard for the truth, are all in my book. I did write a column, which came out yesterday in The Hill, though, on 21 questions that I think the House Judiciary Committee ought to ask Robert Mueller when he comes before them. Because, yes, you can plow through his report and pull things out, but, you know, one out of 500 Americans are going to do so. I think it's very important that the committee extract from Mueller in clear and concise ways how Donald Trump has abused power, colluded with the Russians, and obstructed justice, even if the special counsel could not conclude on a technical basis that he should be charged beyond a reasonable doubt with crime.
I love the quote on the back of your book. It's from Alexander Hamilton, the Federalist, and I believe it's Federalist 56. Impeachment will proceed from the misconduct of public men, or, in other words, from the abuse or violation of some public trust, and they relate chiefly to injuries done immediately to the society itself. That's a very different working definition of impeachment than what I think we have been dealing with recently in all these, you know, everybody's slicing and dicing all the technicalities of who committed what and how and why and is it an impeachable offense, et cetera, et cetera. Can you speak to that as a professor in the Department of History at American University?
Yes.
There is a context here.
There is a deep context here. First of all, let me say that the framers did not regard impeachment as a catastrophic event. Quite the contrary. The framers were shrewd, practical politicians. they know that all men were corruptible, all men needed to be checked. And so they put impeachment into the Constitution as a legal, orderly, and peaceful means for dealing with a rogue president or other officials such as judges. And they expected that impeachment would be employed. And it was an alternative to the way in which rogue leaders were dealt with in their own time in the 18th century by assassination or revolution. And they very decidedly did not put impeachment into the hands of the judiciary, where it would have been a technical legal matter. Rather, they put impeachment into a political body. The sole authority to impeach is in the hands of the House of Representatives. If they impeach, you then have a trial presided over by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and then the Senate votes on removal, and it takes two-thirds. But impeachment only takes a simple majority. And the framers were very clear that impeachment was not equivalent to a criminal violation on the statute books. Statute books change all the time. Campaign finance law violations, for example, didn't even exist at the time of the framing of the Constitution, you know, well over 100 years later before any of those laws were put into effect. But they were very clear that impeachment, as Alexander Hamilton pointed out, was designed to check a president who was abusing his power, undermining our democracy, undermining our national security. There's a tremendous confusion about that. The second thing that people are confused about, Tom, is the difference between impeachment and an impeachment inquiry, and that's been muddled together in the current debate. What I've been advocating is not a rush to impeachment at all, but rather the beginning of an impeachment inquiry. That's just the first step. Yeah. It's not equivalent to impeachment.
Now,
it is essential.
Go ahead.
Because you cannot focus the attention of the American people on scattered investigations in six different committees. It's just going to confuse everyone. And Donald Trump is a master at confusion and deflection. There is no substitute for the formality and focus of an impeachment investigation and the public hearings that would be part of it the way they were during Watergate.
Now, there's two things with regard to an impeachment hearing. Beginning the process. And I think that Hillary Clinton in her op-ed in the Washington Post yesterday pointed out there was a big difference between the way this was handled in 74 with Nixon, where the Senate went through a whole series of investigations to the point that they had laid out all the criminality of Richard Nixon that got public opinion in favor of impeachment above 50%. Before they referred that, you know, before the House referred it to the Senate for actual impeachment, Nixon resigned, compared to 1998, when as soon as the Ken Starr report came out in all its lurid pornographic detail, the House immediately voted to impeach. And that might have been because they didn't want to have, you know, long drawn out debates about it, because the guy leading that debate, Newt Gingrich, was, going back to his office and getting it on with his mistress, Calista. The guy who was, you know, another guy who was managing the floor, Bob Livingston, was having an affair. Another one who was managing the floor, Bob Barr of Georgia, was having an affair. I mean, as I recall, all but one of the people who were leading the impeachment process in the House of Representatives were actively having extramarital relations while they were doing that. But in any case, number one, during an impeachment inquiry, the House acquires some of the powers of the Article III branch of the judiciary in terms of its ability to compel testimony and subpoena things that they might not otherwise have. And number two, that the Constitution says that the pardon power of the president, which could be theoretically used, like Trump apparently did, according to Mueller, in the case of Paul Manafort, to say, just, you know, hang in there, don't rat me out, and I will take care of you by the end of my presidency, that impeachment power is suspended during an impeachment process. Are those two observations accurate? And if so, how so? To what extent do they play a role in all this? And we've got about a minute and a half here, I think, until we hit a hard break.
Sure. I'm not sure that the president's impeachment power would be suspended. That hasn't been tested. But it is absolutely clear that the president cannot pardon himself during an impeachment inquiry or doing a trial. Impeachment is independent of the president's pardon power, and that is crystal clear. And while the House normally has subpoena power, the president, of course, as we've now seen, has no respect for the separation of powers or for the oversight responsibilities of the Congress, and has been stonewalling and resisting, and that could go on for a very long time. But I do believe if you had an impeachment inquiry going on, any resistance by the president would be met with a much more hostile response on the part of the judiciary. Let me close this segment by saying, during Watergate, as you say, you had the Senate investigation, you had the special prosecutor investigation, and you had an impeachment investigation. So a special prosecutor or independent counsel investigation is not a substitute for an impeachment investigation. They're doing very different things.
Right. And very, very quickly, we got 40 seconds now. To what extent? Well, actually, never mind. I think you've already answered the question. You know, to what extent do you expect this thing to play out in the near future?
Well, you know, I think the Democrats really have a moment of truth here. I think if they refuse even to have an impeachment investigation, they will have become, in a sense, the worst enablers of Donald Trump than even the Republicans, because they have no political reason not to do it. And they will have then empowered Trump, as he has been throughout his life, to do whatever damage he wants without a fear of consequence. And that would be a terrible thing. That would be in direct violation of what Alexander Hamilton was talking about.
Professor Lichtman, can you stick around and answer a couple more questions?
Certainly.
Great. We've got to take a break here. It'll just be very, very brief, and we'll continue the conversation. Professor Alan J. Lichtman is with us. His book, The Case for Impeachment. He's the Distinguished Professor of History at American University. His Twitter handle is Alan, A-L-L-A-N, Lichtman, L-I-C-H-T-M-A-N. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with Professor Alan Lichtman in just a moment. And welcome back. Professor Lichtman, with regard to subpoena power, is the subpoena power of the House of Representatives expanded significantly during an impeachment inquiry? And specifically, here's my concern. I'd love to hear from you about the possible catch-22 of all this. If Jerry Nadler holds in contempt of Congress, for example, the Secretary Mnuchin for refusing, or the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service for refusing to turn over Trump's taxes, and then, you know, they defy that and he issues an arrest warrant. That arrest warrant, and correct me if I'm not sure I completely understand this process, that arrest warrant would have to go to the Department of Justice, because that's where the police powers, you know, in the Article II police powers are, that's where they reside, to actually arrest, Steve Mnuchin. And Bill Barr, who is the, you know, the chief of that department, the attorney general, can simply say, no, I'm not going to go arrest him. And then what does Congress do? And has that ever happened before in our history? And does an impeachment inquiry allow any mechanism to get around that barrier?
It does. And by the way, I think William Barr is the most treacherous attorney general in the history of the country. Yes, Sir Richard Kleindienst pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor while attorney general for lying to Congress, but he was a peripheral figure in Watergate. William Barr is at the center of the inquiry surrounding Donald Trump and has repeatedly lied, created omissions, misrepresented the findings of the special counsel solely to protect Donald Trump. That's a violation of his oath of office. But there's only one remedy here. He's absolutely right. Justice Department does enforce subpoenas. But here's the remedy, and it's unique to an impeachment inquiry. One of the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon was his noncompliance with legally issued subpoenas by the Congress.
Really?
So Absolutely.
I'm sorry I missed that.
That was one of three articles voted by the House Judiciary Committee that led to his resignation. The others had, by the way, another one was obstruction of justice.
Right, I knew that.
Another one was abuse of power, all of which apply to Donald Trump. So they could, as a remedy, vote that as an article of impeachment, even without hearing from any of those subpoenaed witnesses. And as I said, he can't get around that. That would trigger by itself a trial in the Senate.
But if you have to drag somebody before the House in order to compel testimony, and the Justice Department refuses to do that, I mean, all Congress has is the sergeant at arms, isn't it?
Right. That's what I'm saying. The real remedy is the remedy in the Nixon case, and that is the House can vote an article of impeachment.
Oh, I see. Well, so essentially what you're saying is we're not even going to hear from these guests or these witnesses. We're just going to go right ahead and try to convict the president.
Well, I think a legitimate grounds, as in the Nixon case, is the refusal of the president to comply with subpoenas, which are essential for the U.S. House to carry out its constitutional duty.
Right.
And about a third of Republicans in the House Judiciary Committee voted for that article of impeachment, along with the other two, against Richard Nixon.
Right, and that was
and
the
by
thing.
By the way,
if you can hold on just for a second through one more break here, we'll continue the conversation. We'll have another 3 or 4 minutes. Professor Alan J. Lichtman is with us, the distinguished professor of history at American University. The book is The Case for Impeachment. We'll be right back. Talking with Professor Alan J. Lichtman, the distinguished professor of history at American University, his book, The Case for Impeachment. And I had just asked him about how, whether in an impeachment case, if there was a way around the fact that the Justice Department has to enforce arrest warrants or citations for contempt of Congress or whatever it may be. And he suggested that one of the three articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon was specifically because Nixon refused to enforce congressional subpoenas, which is what Trump and Barr are doing right now. And you were going to add to that, and then I've got a follow-up question for you, Professor Lichtman.
Yeah, and they could also go ahead, because there's enough evidence in the special counsel's report to impeach him on other grounds as well, including obstruction of justice. And what I was going to say was, in my view, having read the Mueller report, having written about Donald Trump, and having followed the Clinton impeachment, the case on obstruction against Donald Trump is 10 times stronger than the obstruction case against Bill Clinton, for which nearly every Republican in the House and nearly voted to impeach, and nearly every Republican in the Senate, except maybe half a dozen, voted to convict. And the case is on a vastly more important matter than a private consensual affair. It goes to the heart of our democracy and national security.
Amen. So the other question I had for you, there are people who are kind of dreaming out loud that if we were to impeach Donald Trump for corrupt activity and practices, that could then lead to subsequent impeachments of people who were essentially the fruit of the poison tree, Kavanaugh being on the court, or for that matter, just Gorsuch being on the court as a result of Mitch McConnell refusing to allow a president to actually have his nominee as the Constitution provides for. Is that just, pipe dream stuff?
I think it probably is pipe dream stuff. After the impeachment of Andrew Johnson and the impeachment of Bill Clinton, a lot of people are talking about politically weaponizing impeachment, and that just hasn't happened. The House has been very, very circumspect about impeachment. We've only had two presidents actually impeached by the full House, maybe about 15 to 20 judges, no cabinet members. So the House has taken great care with its power of impeachment.
So you would not see an impeachment, or even an impeachment of somebody like Steve Mnuchin or Bill Barr?
I don't see that happening, no.
Yeah. Although
I think the focus would be on the president, although I certainly can see grounds for impeaching William Barr. Mnuchin, a little trickier.
Yeah, and the House certainly has the power to hold William Barr responsible, do they not?
Absolutely. Federal officials are subject to impeachment.
Yeah.
Judges, and, federal officials, presidents, and vice presidents.
And just like everything else, that would have to originate with the Judiciary Committee?
Yes.
In the House of Representatives.
By the way, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, Jerry Nadler, is my old high school debate partner at Stuyvesant High School in the 1960s.
Oh, how great is that?
Yes.
Well, I'm you know, I've been watching him for a while now, and he's really good at what he does. And
he sure is.
And I'm guessing you are too. So, Professor Alan J. Lichtman, Distinguished Professor of History at American University. His book is The Case for Impeachment. And Professor, thank you so much for dropping by today and talking with us.
I enjoyed it. Let's do it again.
Me too. Back at you. We will. Professor Lichtman. And his Twitter handle is Alan Lichtman, L-I-C-H-T-M-A-N. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and, you know, your thoughts as well, your calls right after this. It's coming up on 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Program Occupying the Media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Back with your calls right after this. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Professor Lichtman was pretty skeptical, but I'm wondering if Bill Barr should be impeached. The U.S. press secretary is tweeting a story from the Washington Post. And the narration is, Barr is joining Russian spy Maria Butina in requesting that she be sent home to Moscow without serving a sentence. Butina is a key witness in dozens of crimes who claimed that she was the channel for Russia approving the American Secretary of State. That was Rex Tillerson, by the way. So, we'll see. Angela in Tracy, California. Hey, Angela, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thank you.
I am a 52-year-old black woman. I am retired from law enforcement. And, you know, with Trump in office, I have lived in constant fear. Fear that somebody will bring harm to me because they feel emboldened by this man, or they'll bring harm to my daughter and her black boyfriend because, you know, my husband is white. My daughter looks white, and her boyfriend is black. And I just feel like somebody might bring harm to them because of the way that they look.
Oh, my.
And so, you know, Tom, I feel that as a black woman, I don't speak for all black women. I don't even pretend to. But I feel like as a black woman, I do not have the privilege of demanding purity in a candidate. And so when I saw Joe Biden this morning, for the first time since November when we took back the House, I felt a sense of calm.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, personally, I feel like he might just be the one to beat this guy. And I love Elizabeth Warren. I love Kamala Harris. I'm a Californian.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't get that feeling with them.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like if he puts a woman on the ticket, that would be huge. That would be a historical moment. And I believe that he will.
Oh, I think the odds, if he gets the nomination, I would bet money right now at about a 70% probability that it'll be Kamala Harris on the ticket with him. Plus, that's you know, unlike Elizabeth Warren, that's a state, you know, California's a state where if a senator goes on the vice presidential ticket, she will be replaced by another Democrat, whereas Elizabeth Warren would be replaced by a Republican.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. You know, we have to be realistic here. This is the country that put that man in office, okay?
Right, twice.
Trump.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought you were talking about Biden.
This is the country that put Trump in office. So I mean, no matter how you look at it, you know, you can think Hillary had a weak campaign. I don't. But you can think that, you know, the Russians helped him, whatever. He's there.
Yep.
So we have to We have to be realistic about this, okay?
I think
we
you're... Can't, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, we can't demand that, you know, we get everything that we want.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Angela. You know? And if Joe Biden is our party's nominee, I will do everything in my power. I would you know, crawl over broken glass to make him president. And I think, frankly, everybody will. I would say that is true of any, frankly, any nominee. And
me
and,
too, Tom.
And
me
think,
too.
And I think Joe Biden is a solid guy. I can point to a number of, and I have over the years, and I'm not going to today because I'm really committed to not doing circular firing squad crap on this show. But, you know, there are a number of areas in his political past where I've disagreed with him and where I may continue to disagree with him. But as you point out, Angela, compared to the large issues that we're confronting, like literally the survival of democracy in a constitutionally limited republic, they are small compared to that. I mean, I think this is a time of crisis that our nation has not experienced since the Civil War. And
absolutely. Tom, can I just add one thing?
Sure.
If there's a silver lining to Trump, he has made many activists out of all of us. I was in law enforcement, okay?
Yeah.
I am out there. I am protesting. I am holding up my signs and posting it on Facebook. And I have the Trumpers. A lot of law enforcement are Trumpers.
Yeah. Oh,
okay?
I know.
People that I used to work with are big-time Trumpers, okay?
Yeah.
And I call their offices every day. I am very optimistic that we the people are going to push these Democrats to do their jobs and impeach this guy.
Yeah.
I am optimistic they will do it.
Yeah.
And
if they don't actually remove him from office, just the impeachment proceeding itself will reveal enough of his crimes and his perfidy that enough more people will be disgusted by him that that they will not vote for him. And let's hope that that's the case. I mean, the scary thing to me, and the other reason why I'm very, very cautious about, circular firing squad stuff on this program, is the meeting last week that got virtually no coverage in the media of a group of right-wing billionaires who have been funding Republican candidates who chose not to fund Donald Trump in the election in 2016, who have now gotten together and said, this time around we're going to fund Trump to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. And so, they're dead set. They're going to hold on to the White House and they're going to hold on to the Senate so they can get more of their right-wing judges in, so that those right-wing judges can knock down environmental defenses, knock down worker defenses, and so that the captains of industry in America can continue to control and basically own all of us. And, I don't want to see that happen. I absolutely don't. Angela, I need to move along, but thank you for your call. Thank you for calling, being a first-time caller, and thanks for your patience in coming on the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. Good talking with you, Angela. Jim, I don't know where you are, Jim. 619 area code or zip code?
Yeah, I'm in Moultrie County in Illinois.
Oh, okay.
Central Illinois.
Okay, what's on your mind, Jim?
Well, first I wanted to say, I want to make a comment about Bernie's statement about making prisoners. There's a lot of people I don't like voting. One of these groups is those militias that fly a Nazi flag. When you fly a Nazi flag, I don't think you should have a right to vote. And same with these people who fly a Confederate flag. These people are traitors. They don't belong.
Jim, they may be. That
yeah,
may be.
Know,
that may all be true. They may be
the right.
Traitors. They may be terrible people, but they have the right of free speech in this country.
And I think voting is a free speech thing, and I think people.
No, I think voting is a duty. It's a duty of citizenship.
Yeah, but it's still expressing their free speech. But as far as Joe Biden, it doesn't seem kind of funny that last time when the Democrats had only four or five people coming out to run, now there's a who knows how many is running now.
20.
They don't want Bernie in there. They're doing everything they can not to get Bernie in there. And I ain't buying it no more. I ain't going to vote for somebody. If the party ain't going to follow what the people want, the hell with the party.
Well, we will find out, Jim. We will find out. And, that's why we have elections. In Dothan, Alabama, I'm not sure how to pronounce your name. It would be helpful if they were here phonetically. EAC? How do I say that?
Yes, Pat.
Ayak?
Pat.
Okay. Go ahead. I can hardly hear you.
Okay. You keep talking about the Democrat problem with the election. They got the get out of jail card right there with them right now. Beto, as vice president, would give the Democrat Texas. That's a 72-point swing.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't understand what you're saying. He's on line six, Nick. If you want to find out what's going on, maybe he could call back. Rich in Central Woolley, Washington. Hey, Rich, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, your guest totally changed my gears here. I was thinking, could Congressman Nadler say, okay, we need Trump's taxes within 24 hours. They're not here. You're in contempt of Congress, at which point we're going to start fining you $1,000 a day and one day in jail until we have Trump's taxes. And this will be enforced by the DOJ at some point when we have putting the DOJ who's willing to enforce it. Therefore, they can accumulate these penalties and fines until Trump is out of office and still be penalized. I can look forward to that.
Yeah, I don't know how that would work, Rich, but I agree with your sentiment. And I think that the penalties should be the maximum that the statute provides for.
Okay, yeah. The other thing about Biden, just real quick about Biden, I'm worried about in an economic crisis, he's going to go more DLC neoliberal than FDR.
He may. I mean, you know, at the moment, at least he won't be a Republican. But, you know, how we resolve the next financial crisis, let's hold that discussion in abeyance. I think that there are a lot of lessons learned from 2008. You know, bailing out the banks did not work, did not help. Got us out. But I think it's been a temporary fix. But we'll see. Rich, thanks for the call. JT in Austin, Texas. Hey, JT, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I just want to point out something that I think you touched on earlier, which is who is leading what is the true populist movement in America today, that being the movement that opposes Trump. Because you've had a consistent majority of Americans opposed to Trump pretty much since he was elected. And that group ranges from, you know, like former Republicans such as Richard Painter to AOC and everyone in between. So this is a huge populist movement, not the fake populist movement that, you know, we hear about in the media, which is the right-wing authoritarian movement.
Right.
But a genuine, broad-based, big tent movement that opposes Trump. And, like, who is the leader of this movement? And it seems to me whoever can step in and grab this group, they're going to crush Trump.
Well, the leader of that movement up until the last few months has been Bernie Sanders. But, you know, now Elizabeth Warren has laid claim to a good chunk of it. And I think there are a few other Democrats who are trying to. I'm not sure that they're having the success that Warren and Sanders have had. Yeah, but and you're so right, JT, in pointing out that Trump is he's running a populist campaign, and he's a phony populist.
Yeah, and I mean, since the Mueller report came out, Trump's poll numbers have dropped below like 40%.
Right.
But at the same time, support for impeachment also dropped. And I'm wondering, is that not because the Democrats have been saying
hang on, JT. The reason why support for impeachment dropped, and it will be rising again, is because for 3 weeks, Bill Barr and Donald Trump and Fox News and right-wing hate radio and even the corporate media were saying, hey, no collusion, no crime, no obstruction. Donald Trump is pure as the driven snow. He's just fine. And now we know that that wasn't true. Those are lies from Bill Barr.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
But those lies from Bill Barr radically affected public opinion in the United States. Back with your calls in just a moment. And welcome back. David in Mamaroneck, New York. Hey, David, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Well, Tom, it's good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
I enjoyed listening to Professor Lichtman, and he was concerned about the necessity of having to impeach Barr to get him to do what he's supposed to do. And I haven't heard this mentioned, but Barr, I think, is maybe subject to professional discipline, in fact, disbarment, for having misled a tribunal. It's fundamental for a lawyer to not mislead a court, which, you know, is also stupid. But
what is the tribunal that he misled? I thought he was just misleading public opinion.
No, well, no. He sent a letter to the committee chairs. The letters that he sent, the original four-page letter and the others,
right.
Set forth lies.
And so he lied to Congress, basically.
He lied to Congress.
Right.
As opposed to, well, the statute against lying to Congress, which, you know, is a criminal statute.
Right.
There's also attorneys are subject to discipline for just lying to a court, to any tribunal.
But do you have to? I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know. And I don't know if you are, David. Does a lawyer?
Yes.
You are a lawyer. Great. Does a lawyer have to?
Judge, actually.
You're a judge, even better. Does a lawyer have to be convicted of violating those rules before they're subject to disbarment by the Bar Association? Or
no.
Okay, that's an extrajudicial proceeding or a proceeding that is limited to the Bar Association.
Correct.
Interesting. And,
I've never heard anybody say anything about it. I mean, that what he did in 1989 was clearly a lie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with his
well, there were two of them. Actually, there were three of them. He covered up Iraqgate, he covered up Iran-Contra, and he lied about whether or not George Herbert Walker Bush had the power to arrest Noriega.
I don't know that he covered it up as much as advised his client to cover it up.
Correct.
Which is different.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Although he was, you know, he was telling stories to the public. I don't know, you know, if he did that in writing to Congress. Would it be an individual state's bar? I know Bill Clinton was disbarred, but, you know, as a consequence of his conviction, but I don't know, and I'm not being a lawyer, I don't know the mechanism. How would this play out?
I would imagine he's a member of the D.C. Federal Bar.
Correct.
And they have their own set of rules, which probably follow the American Bar Association model rules, which clearly set forth you can't do that.
Because he was a lawyer in D.C. He was a member of a D.C. law firm.
Right, and so, presumably so, practicing in federal court.
Right, right.
So there's a federal bar, there's state bars, you know, it's somewhat of a crazy quilt.
Right, and these are all independent organizations, right?
Yes.
So is there any way for outsiders to assert any pressure on any of these bar associations to consider disbarring Barr?
I would think that any member of the bar, those bar associations, can bring the complaint. I would imagine a member of the public could probably do it, too. I mean, lawyers are disbarred for a lot of complaints that come from the public as well as their colleagues.
Fascinating. David, thank you for educating me.
I'm happy to do it. You do that for me all the time.
Now, fair trade. David, thank you so much for the call. It's great to hear from you. I truly appreciate it. Thank you for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's coming up on 9 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi. I'm really, you know, I guess it's hard to define whether he committed treason or not. But I think...
Is the he you're talking about Trump?
Oh, Trump.
Okay.
Trump. Right.
Because we've been talking about impeaching Bill Barr, too. So, anyhow,
right.
Continue.
Right. There's a line of them. No one should be able to run out the statute of limitations on committing a federal crime like that high. Why don't they change the regulations for that? And
it's not a regulation, it's a law, and the law would have to change. It would have to be passed by the House, then passed by the Senate, then signed by Trump. And Trump, you know, even if the Republicans in the Senate went along with it, Trump is not going to sign a law that says that, you know, his liability is extended.
How about if the law said all traitors get no statute of limitation? Who would not sign that?
Well, that's a good one. You know, it's crimes of treason. The question is whether it's treason to break the campaign finance laws, for example, by covering up an affair with a Playboy bunny.
No, to me, it's with Russia, because they're a third-rate punk nation. You know, their GDP is half that of California, and they invaded us. They committed warfare against us, and he cozied up to them, and he did not fight them on anything. And to me, that's treason.
Yeah, I get it, but I'm not sure that the law says that that's treason, although it may well be. This is what, number one, Congress needs to investigate. And then, yeah, I'm with you, Bill, that maybe we need to revisit our laws. Thank you for the call. James in Spokane, Washington. Hey, James, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just want to speak to the fact that the GOP party is a grand obfuscation party.
Yeah, you know, among other things, or gritty old politicians, or, I mean, fill in the blank, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Concerning the Democrat nominee, we have to vet these corporate Democrats strictly, Tom. I mean, really strictly. 2-3 months ago, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, I saw Joe Biden pinning a medal on the war criminal George W. Bush and Laura Bush. I don't even know what the award was.
Yeah, James, when you call Democratic candidates Democrat candidates, I start wondering about the provenance, you know, about where you're coming from. Jeremy in Glendora, California. Hey, Jeremy, what's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to ask you, with regard to all things Mueller, do you think that Trump, I know you don't think he deserves that much, but does he and the country deserve to know the complete origin in 2015, 2016, when the whole investigation got started and why?
You're talking about the Mueller investigation?
Correct. Everything, all things Russia, everything that birthed the entire narrative of collusion.
Right. What about it? I don't understand your question.
Do we deserve to know exactly when, why, and who it started?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
All right. Thank you, Jeremy. Lee in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Lee, what's on your mind?
Yeah. Not just calling about Trump's tax returns. Everyone wants to see Trump's tax returns. I mean, it's not a law that he shows his tax returns, but why isn't anybody asking about people in Congress or, say, like Nancy Pelosi, their tax returns, where they've made millions?
Their tax returns are all public, Lee. All these people have filed financial disclosure forms, and you can find them all online or on their websites. Nancy Pelosi has laid out her tax returns. Steve in Sebring, Florida. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Hey, I had a couple of things, but the first thing is I've noticed a pattern of Trump. When the bank rates go down, he tries to refinance his properties in order to gain the best advantage he can at a lower rate.
What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it except for the fact that he wants to put in two more guys on the Fed. And on the Fed, they're supposed to control the interest rate so that inflation or a depression or a recession doesn't happen. If he gets them guys in there and they lower the interest rate down, you're going to see people or banks like Deutsche Bank and maybe even the Bank of Cyprus wanting to lend him money.
Right. Wilbur Ross's bank. No, you're right, Steve.
When the interest rates go up, he's got a lower rate to pay on the same property he's been mortgaging for three times.
Yeah, no, I get it. Now, up until now, we've all been saying, hey, wait a minute, he wants to put, you know, Stephen Moore and these
Herman
guys.
Cain.
Yeah, Herman Cain on the Fed because he wants to lower interest rates to juice the economy to get himself reelected. But you're saying it's not just to get himself reelected, it's so that he can refinance his properties at a lower interest rate and be more profitable.
Absolutely.
That makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense, Steve. I don't know if he's thinking that way. On reflection, I'd be surprised if he's not thinking that way because he seems to be thinking about his own interests all the time under all circumstances. Thanks so much for being with us today, for your calls, your thoughts, your arguments, your debates, the information. Special tip of the hat to Alan J. Lichtman. And, you know, let's just not forget, voting is a duty. Participation in a democracy is required if it's going to function well. And we would like our democracy to function well once again. So please, get out there, get active, find something to do. There's always a niche where you can fit in and have a great time. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.